Happy Tuesday, boys and girls. My name is Jeffrey Scott Measure. And I was thinking, I'm out here trying to be out here every day, walking my 4+ miles before work. And even on my off days, I try to get out here for that much walking. When I walk, no music, no podcast, no earbuds. It's me thinking to myself, pondering, administrating, hypothesizing, taking it all in, the external sounds and things that's going through my head, things that's happening at night. I mean, things that's happening in my life, future, past. It's much more than just walking. It's much more than just the physical aspect of walking. It's a time I look forward to where it's just nothing but me and quiet. And some of you will probably say, well, hell, you live by yourself. Of course it's going to be quiet. You're going to get your quiet. I don't understand. So I guess there has to be an added aspect to being out and walking, and especially walking this path. This path that I'm at, my default location, my default path. So I'm kind of comfortable with it. I know it. You know, I could probably walk this blindfolded, so to speak. It's fairly aesthetically pleasing, if you can see it. It's fairly aesthetic, you know, it's a little bit of green. It's definitely a metro green. We're still in the city, a California greenness to it. And I love seeing that nice long pathway. I love seeing that nice long straight line to walk. And also I can go up, walk up there, just like a little trail up there too, that I see people walking. Then of course on the other side is where some of the homeless go to do things they do when they don't want people to see them. But, and all that plays into it. All of that plays into it. And the sun, the sky, California, working up a sweat, getting the adrenaline going. I don't even know if it's the adrenaline. Let's be honest, I don't know if it's the adrenaline or if it's just, getting the blood going, waking up, getting at it, always of where Mr. Scale told me right before I left. Because I do this. I try to do this everywhere I go. Whether it be at the ultimate remote location, Youngstown, or the undisclosed location at my mother's, I take Mr. Scale with me. Mr. Scale travels with me. I've been doing that for years, decades, weighing myself 2-3 times a day for decades. So I know, basically, when I get on the scale, I pretty much know what it's gonna say. Every now and then I get a surprise, and I'll step off, and I'll step on it to recalibrate it, to make sure. But I've seen some weird ways before, where they jump too much or jump. I get a really high one to come back and get like one lower. For whatever reason. So the ways, the exactness of the ways, of the weights that I measure don't really concern me. It's the trend. It's the overall trend. If it's going up or if it's going down. This morning it said 222.0, I believe, which is going down. And yesterday I did fairly good. I did fairly good. Or should I say I did better? I didn't do good. I did better. I had carrot sticks, celery, and grapes during the day after my breakfast, which was a half a Italian sausage link, quarter cup of grits, quarter cup of cottage cheese. That's the standard. I've probably been eating that for a decade too. Well, I hadn't been doing grits in a while. I might have been doing the instant grits, the nasty ones. Well, not nasty, but you know, the more generic 5-minute grits. Until I went over to Funkin's house and he served me some real grits. And I ain't never made them quick instant grits again. I never did it again after I had his grits that day. So I've been eating that for a while. That gets me through the morning. I taught myself how to eat breakfast. A lot of people don't eat breakfast. A lot of people can get up and have coffee. A lot of people ain't got to go. I used to go starve myself till noon or whatever. Try to not eat until lunchtime. And every now and then, you know, you get irritable. If your body didn't have food, it would catch myself. I would catch myself knowing I need to eat and knowing I should have ate. But I taught myself how to eat breakfast, to knock it off. Get up, knock off that hunger in the morning, and then try to go to a day without just eating or like building up a really healthy appetite, you know, at some point in the day. Because I can't drink any water or any liquid until I put food in my stomach. If I drink water, it's coming back up. And it's still gonna be cold. So anytime before I take medicine or anything, I eat. So I made myself start eating some kind of breakfast. Then hopefully go through the day, burn it off, and not be, you know, starving or trying to eat all day long. So I had carrots. I bought carrots. I spent $5 on, instead of buying a bag of carrots for maybe like $2.99, I paid $5 for carrot sticks that are already cut up. Don't know why. Seems more fancy. Seems easier to eat. In some ways, it seems to taste better. And I got celery. You know, I was eating the celery. I could have swore I tasted salt. I was like, ooh, this is good. Another thing, I got to cut out the potato chips. Get my blood pressure down. I got to cut out the potato chips. Go back to my unsalted potato chips where I put vinegar on them. Apple cider vinegar on them. And potassium chloride, new salt. New salt and no salt. And I don't put salt in my grits, so I don't put salt in any of my food, pretty much. Except for if I'm partying. And by partying, I mean like on vacation, out, having food celebrations, you know, with family or whatever. You know, we out hanging. Do that, do this. Like we go to Cha-Cha's, wherever we go to eat. Speaking of eating, we went to the game, Laker game. We got 3 hot dogs. It wasn't regular hot dogs, so I mean, I have to admit, they wasn't regular hot dogs. These was like some obviously upscale hot dogs. You could tell the ingredients was next level. They were like $15 a piece. We got three hot dogs and two french fries came to $70. Funny thing is, parking only was 40, and we parked like right across from Crypto Staples. See, I was thinking too, AOL at one time was the big dog. I mean, one of the most powerful, most profitable, lucrative companies in the world. And they was buying stuff. They bought Time Warner. Everybody remember? See, I was on AOL before AOL got the respect it did. But it was still all new. You know, people still didn't trust the internet or use it. Then AOL blew up, and they ended up buying Time Warner, not the other way around. And then Staples, the department store, Office Depot, Staples, they were on top. They were like the big money makers. So they bought Staples Center. You know, they had enough money to get their name put on that stadium. And now you think, Staples and FedEx, remember FedEx Kinko's? How big and popular those things were. You know, they FedEx Stadium with this, all that. Whoever's the lucrative moneymaker seems to put their names on stadium. So now, and arena. So now, they sell sponsorship. They sell advertising. The arena sells it like Heinz Field became AquaSure. I think because they was getting like 15 million or something like that a year, something like that. That don't seem like a lot. But I guess, you start thinking in today's terms. Because we're so used to hearing millions thrown around, athletes making so many millions, but it's still really a lot of money. But we just got used to that amount. Let's see if it goes better if I just went a little better. We still got used to that, amount. Millions. We just got comfortable with it. But that's still a lot of money. So now it's Crypto Arena. Crypto's supposed to be all this and all that. Crypto's the thing. Remember, Staples was the thing. Office Depot. I remember I had all kinds of office products. To love Staples. And Office Depot. When I was into paper products and that kind of storage of writing and information, binders, paper, printing paper, markers. Hell, I had protractors, compasses, three-hole punches. Okay. A lot of that I got from work. A lot of that stuff I got from different jobs. Staplers. All of that. Watch this house being remodeled, rebuilt. I got pictures of it being remodeled, rebuilt. From when it used to be blue. A light shade of blue. And they corded out, hollowed it out or whatever, tore it down, rebuilt the bathroom. Except for the frame. I think they left the frame. But, so that's what it's about. I also heard, I found out yesterday, the Sunset Bowl Lanes in Farrell, Pennsylvania, where a lot of my family's from, where I spent a lot of time growing up. I spent a lot of time in Farrell. I used to be able to run the streets of Farrell. When I say run the streets, well, I did run the streets when I got older. But I meant like, as a kid, I was able to just go walking from one house to the other from one cousin's house to the other, or walk to the store, walk to the pizza place. You know what I mean? When you're so young, that's like a big deal. Youngstown was a bigger city and had a deeper reputation, so, you know, I was quote unquote scared to do that. Just based on lore. Hillman Street, you know, ooh, scary. That's where all the, you know, thugs and people like that hang out. And then as I got older, I was up there on that street right with him. Just like in Farrell once. Because, you know, half the damn city is my cousin. So I wasn't worried about nothing. I used to run around that city. I wasn't worried about nothing. It's like everybody knew me. Everybody knew me. They knew Vernon and Lisa, the Stewarts. My father's side of the family also lived on Farrell, on Emerson. I don't think their reputation was as infamous as the Stewarts and the Brodies and the Shorts. Just running around, they used to know about the bars back there and this and that and all kinds of stuff. Thinking about running around that old city. And I found out yesterday that the bowling alley, Sunset Lanes, is still open. My father used to bowl there. We used to, you know, sometimes go there and bowl, open bowling, 50 years ago. 50 years ago, my father used to bowl Lincoln Knowles Bowling Alley. I used to love going to that bowling alley. Just the way it was set up, the marquee of it. I think it was a guy bowling, a neon sign of a guy bowling or something like that. They used to say, my father be there so much. The rumor was he owned stock or he owned the place or something like that. Used to go in there. We used to call him, he used to be bowling. Every Saturday we call him. Dad, could you bring home a pizza? Every Saturday we would call him. And I'm thinking now, he could have told us to, you know, that he'd bring home a pizza if we didn't have to call. We called every Saturday, and I'm sure they had to page him, and he'd come to the phone. You know. He'd bring home a pizza. And we'd be up waiting. I'm like, at some point he could have said, all right, I'm going to bring him a pizza. You know, every Saturday. And we called like it was new. Who's going to do it? You going to do it? All right, you do it. You do it, I'm going to do it. You do it, you call. I called last week. Because it meant so much to us. And if you think about it, we had to get the number. I'm sure he didn't give us the number to the place. We had to get the number and figure it out and call. Yeah. Used to go to Lincoln Knowles. I think I did open bowling at Lincoln Knowles. Also, there was two bowling alleys on Market Street in Youngstown, like right next door to each other. Mar Hill and Marvindale. It was like literally like right next to each other. Bowling was big back there. And out here, not so much. And I can understand why. Space. Just pure out space. Property value. Bowling alleys are big. They'd have to generate a lot of income to justify that much space. Unless maybe you put it on top of a building. You know, have a floor on a building where you can you know, get further use out of that property. But yeah, I was like, oh, Sunset Lanes, I gotta go in there. I'm gonna have to go in there at least go in if we don't bowl. And I'm thinking, well, ain't no sense taking Grand out of there. But I wonder if they have those things where they can push the ball down and it roll down the thing. I guess she might like doing that. In fact, I know she'd love doing that. I just push it down. She gonna want to slide down it and or go running after the ball down the lane. That's one thing about children. Children wake up the family. Newborn, childs, babies, toddlers, whatever you want to call it. Children wake up the family. And it's because everything is new to them. So they don't know, quote unquote, what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to do it. You know, whatever that means. They see it and they just, their personality is they going to do what they think, you know. They're going to put their little spin on this or that. Or how you're supposed to handle this or that, or what you're supposed to do in this situation. Or what interests them. Or what they want to grab, what they want to touch. So it's interesting to see how they react to certain things and their perspective of it. That's one thing about granddaughter I like. Just watching how she, you know, just when she's little, I just give her a box. Or just give her something. And just let her do what she do. See how she handle it, what she want to do with it. You know, sometimes she find to do something to it that I didn't think of. I was like, oh, okay. Or sometimes she'll repeat a step she saw me do, or she'll repeat something she saw somebody else do. And sometimes she'll do it to imitate it, but it'll come out different. And that's all, obviously, that's always cool. Like, when I have conversation with foreign people don't sound politically correct, not that I care, but when I have conversation with people who English is their second language, they'll phrase things differently, and that different way of phrasing it puts a little cool little spin on it sometimes. The words they use to substitute the meaning in their native language, I put like a whole different spin on it. Oh, okay. And then sometimes just the way they address things is different than I say we do here in America, or, you know, English language, basically standard English. How we refer to things and phrase things is different. So it's always fun to see a different perspective on, you know, because we all can look at the same thing. That's why I say there's no ultimate reality. We all can look at the same exact thing and we'll all come up with something different. If you ask me, we can all look at the color blue. Say, no, that's blue. But we don't know what the other person is seeing. We just know that that person was taught and trained that when they see that color, whatever color it appears to them as, you call it blue. We don't know. I don't know what your blue looks like. You don't know what my blue looks like. And I think that's something that people should be aware of and understand, that we are not all the same. There is no universal thing. Just because you want it doesn't mean everybody want it. There's no key to happiness for it. There's no one universal key to happiness. That's why when I try to quantify happiness, I label it as an individual's attainment of their passions, the experience of their own personal passions, their desires, how many of those are fulfilled, the fulfillment of an individual's desires unto itself. I came up with that, partially that concept when I was waxing poetically about funk. I said funk can only be described by one unto itself. Nobody can tell you what funky is. Nobody can tell you what your funk is. Nobody can tell you what's funky. And I think soon as we realize, well, that's probably a strong way to put it, I think society and humans would be better off, whatever that means, once we realize that we really are individuals. We really, really are individuals. But with the internet, more and more, we're learning how to live and understand other people's opinions, and that everybody doesn't agree. We're being exposed to opinions that are drastically against ours. We're getting exposed to ideas and commentary that is contrary to what we believe, our deep beliefs. We're getting contradictions and evidence and ideas that, you know, conflict with deeply held beliefs that we had. And so now we're like, hey, you know, we're confronted with the fact that what we believe can be deeply questioned, and is deeply questioned, that everybody doesn't believe like you believe, you know? We gotta watch that. And I think it's a good thing that we're exposed like that. That we're exposed to different thoughts and beliefs. And well, I believe that's a good thing. But I also think it's good that we're learning how to live and deal with that. To actually, you know, live and deal and have that understanding. Cope, even, you could say, with that. So it's just all good. And there's just so many tools out there. Talking to my buddy, my fellow content provider, content maker at work. He has a podcast show. Joe Marshall's Lunch Therapy. I'll give him a shout out. And he's more professional. More, I don't want to say mainstream, but his production is definitely polished and targeted. Well, I wouldn't say polished, but it's going in that more mainstream, professional-ish type of format and setup, and repetitive things, you know, to get repetitive, like parts of the show to have people look forward to, you know, routine, whatever. And he has, you know, like real people on the show. People who've done stuff, like, you know, real professionals and stuff. So I was talking to him, and I said, look what I found. I found Opus Clips, and da, da, da. He said, yeah, I love that. He said he'd been using it, you know. And he said, yeah, blah, blah, blah. We talking about the tools and the stuff out there and all that. And he said, yeah, you know, it works for us because we got so much content. It just hit me. We do. You know, we just got so much content. We need an AI-driven mechanism or something to help us process all that. Decades of talk and banter and transcripts. He was saying to one guy, he had an Excel spreadsheet. You know, I guess you can have an Excel spreadsheet with time and, you know, columns and designation of that, of what you talked about and what you didn't. But, because you want to, because what I do is I get the transcript, upload to YouTube, I get the transcript after a few hours, pop that into ChatGPT, and let ChatGPT summarize it, give me tags, give me a summary, pick out 5 points, and I just take that and post it in the description of the video. I mean, it's a tool. AI is a tool. And I was talking to today yesterday, it's going to replace a lot of people. It's going to replace a lot of ordinary, regular people. Ordinary, regular jobs are going to go away. We won't be needing some mundane stuff, quote unquote mundane stuff, because I don't want to call it mundane, because some people actually like going to a record store and browsing through the albums. It was something about going to Pooh Bahs in Pasadena every Friday after I got paid, and going to the used albums and going through them one by one. You know, it was something about that. I'd go to the 50 Cent, you know, the cheap stack, and look through them. Then they had a more pricier stack that I would look at every now and then. But I was paying 50 cent, 25 cent for a record, for an album, you know. So I'm gonna come home with some good stuff, some cassettes, all of that. You know, couldn't wait to get home. I don't even know if I could listen to them when I got home. I don't even know if I listened to them when I got home. I just had them. Because I know I had a turntable, but you know, I never listened to them. It's more of a collector, I guess. I gave him all the Team Oxnard. I gave him all the Kareem, because I knew he'd take care of him. And I knew I wasn't going to. Of course, I took out all the, what I thought were gems, and all the P-Funk out. And I gave him the rest, because I knew he'd take care of him. You know, and I didn't have to worry about it. So I was, so many of them had him in crates in alphabetical order for the most part, you know. Now, everything on Spotify. Now everything's digital, it's on your phone. You don't have to carry around cassettes or containers or holders anymore. $10 a month, I get Spotify. I can listen to all the music I want, pretty much. And some new stuff. And podcasts. And audiobooks. Oh my God. Spotify got some bomb-ass audiobooks, including free. I think they're going to break that off and spin that off eventually, because I think that's a whole separate, that could be a whole separate thing, because Audible charges like $14 a month to have that. Spotify is breaking into it, and there's a lot of good titles on Spotify's audiobooks. But in Audible, what I do with Audible is every now and then I have a special for $4.95 a month for 3 months. And I'll get that $4.95 special a month for 3 months. And then I'll get a credit for each of those months. So I'll get the credits and buy a book. Buy an audiobook that may cost $25, $30. And then as soon as that $4.95 is up, I cancel. But I still keep the book I bought. In fact, I got 4 credits now I got to use. And then it gets to the point where I got to cancel before a certain day or get charged $14. And I got to go through and pick 4 titles. And it ain't easy. It ain't as easy as you think. So much to choose from. So I probably should start looking at that now. Looking into that now, actually. So, that's how that goes. That's how that is. That's how it goes. And I think I did enough time today. Not that there's an allotment or a requirement or a basic blah, 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 blah. I think I'm getting tired. I think I'm getting tired. Anyhow, swinging on y'all 2 times. For me, for the funk, for every elementary particle that has ever existed in any atom, in this or in any universe that ever was, is, or will be, totality of it all, theory of universe, hypothesis of all as one. My name is Jeffrey.